All right. I will call this meeting of the Workforce Development, Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 8th. Yeah, March 8th. We do have quorum. I see the chair has made it, but I'll do the minutes. We've got the minutes from March 3rd, 2023. Representative Baker moves the minutes to March 3rd. Any discussion to the minutes? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendments are approved. Representative Brand, would you like to move your bill, House File 1501, be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that is my motion, and I have an amendment as well.
All right. Would you like to move that A1 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A1 amendment. This is a technical amendment. It's been vetted by Deed, and so it's just some language in there that kind of cleans some things up. The other body is the one that drafted the bill, so we need to make it the best bill possible. So here we go.
That's the goal. All right. Representative Brand moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the A1? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Brand, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the extended employment service rate increases are a part of a bill that we would like to have funded this year that allows for extended employment opportunities for persons with severe disabilities. So as we know, we've got a very tight workforce labor market right now in the state of Minnesota with unemployment rates that we haven't had in a very long time. In fact, where I represent in Greater Mankato, we have an unemployment rate that is the lowest in the entire nation. And so it's an opportunity for us to have more folks in the workforce, and honestly, it provides dignity to the folks that otherwise wouldn't have opportunities to be employed. So I'm asking for some funding here to increase opportunities for these folks. In the past, funding for this has been sporadic. It hasn't really been consistent. We're looking for an opportunity with some consistency in here. Part of the legislation actually has an inflator in here as well, just so we can continue to have a stability of funding over time. And I've got some folks here today that want to testify in the bill. Happy to pass it over to them and happy to answer questions afterwards.
Please welcome the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cassia Janicich, and I'm here today representing Tasks Unlimited along with the Moore EE committee. I'm the chair of that committee. A special thanks to Representative Brand for chief authoring the bill, as well as co-authors Censor Mura, Hemmingson Yeager, Representative Frazier, as well as Representative Hassan. We're really excited to be here today, and I am extremely excited to introduce you to one of our consumers at Tasks Unlimited, Herman Gordon. Herman has worked with us for a number of years and I think has a really impactful story about the effectiveness of this program and the ways that it can change people's lives. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, proceed. My name is Herman Gordon. I work with Tasks Unlimited. I just want to talk about the extended employment thing, touch on a few bases. How it affects me, I mean, I'm a recovering drug addict, and I've been sober for 6 years now. And it's something I never knew that I had mental illness early on in my life. It extended from molestation. My mom's brother molested me from 5 to 8, and that's just something I blocked out for so long. And I never dealt with my mental illness until I got in my 40s. And it really helped me with medication and steady work with Tasks Unlimited, and now I've been with Tasks since 2013. And this is a really good program, and I'm an advocate for it. It really works, and it has changed my life for the better, And this is not my first time speaking in front of people about mental illness. I go to prisons and speak about people with mental illness and drug problems, and this is something that need to be talked about, not just pushed under the rug. These kind of programs really work for people like me. There's other people out in the world that's like that. that's not perfect, that's got defects, you know. And I'm sure everybody got some kind of similarities in their life where they go through something. And for so long, I blocked that out. And the reason I'm a big advocate for this, because I think that it's so focused for people that the world overlook. You know, these kinds of programs need to be paid attention to. You know, and I understand it's budget cuts and it's different things, inflation, you know, and but I just wanted to get my opinion out there about it, you know, because I live it, you know. And I know this work, this program has worked for me for 10 years. And the majority of them years, you know, I battle with different things. But for the most part, I stand here today and I have joy, you know, with extended employment. It helps with my self-esteem. I wake up, I feel like I accomplished something in this world, you know. And, yeah, I really advocate for TAS, you know, other programs with people with mental illness, you know. And a few years ago, I heard Mark Dayton speak, and I never knew he was diagnosed with bipolar. So that really opened my eyes to see a politician like him that could openly speak about it and not hush it on the rug. And I thank you guys for your time, and have a good day.
Thank you for sharing your story. Representative Brandon, do you have another testifier?
Yeah, I have a couple of other folks that wish to testify.
Please, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Shelley Borman, Workforce Development Manager with Goodwill Easter Seals in Wilmer. I oversee the Extended Employment EE program for Goodwill and have since 2016. Goodwill Easter Seals currently serves 131 participants in EE in the areas that extend from Elk River, St. Cloud, Wilmer, Hutchinson, Mankato, Rochester, and the entire metro with staff across four teams. I'm here today also as a legislative representative for MOR, the Minnesota Organization of Habilitation and Rehabilitation. MOR is a collective voice of over 100 providers throughout the state working to ensure people with disabilities are able to live engaging lives in their communities. MOR EE, made up of 27 MOR providers, works to ensure people with disabilities are able to obtain and maintain stable employment. EE is a pay-for-performance program that funds agencies across the state to support persons with disabilities who work, most of them in individual jobs at or above minimum wage. They are taxpayers, and especially now in the workforce shortage, all of the jobs persons do are important in their communities. At Goodwill alone, our contract provided support to individuals who worked 98,708 hours in their communities last fiscal year. The funding for EE has not increased since 2017. As you know, inflation has increased dramatically since 2020, and with that, we have seen wages increase. As social service agencies, we are asking for an increase to help retain our high-quality staff to provide these EE services. I am asking you to support House File 1501 that will give our agencies an increase in funding and also the annual inflator adjuster to help us continue high-quality support services to persons with disabilities who are working in all of our communities. I know everyone we work with are proud of the jobs they have. They are taxpayers and contributing members in all of their communities and our society. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and other members of the committee. I'm Tammy Reuter with MRCI in Mankato, Minnesota. Our supported employment programming at MRCI is primarily in southern Minnesota and the southern metro communities. In 2018, MRCI supported 327 individuals in supported employment programming with an average wage of $9.58 per hour. In 2022, MRCI supported 400 individuals, which was an increase of 22% since 2018, and we are proud to report that those individuals earned an average wage of $13.83 per hour, which was an increase of 44% since 2018. In December of this last year, we logged or reported more than 28,000 working hours by our clients for a variety of large and small employers, retail, hospitality, manufacturing, the list is long. Just like you and me, our clients apply, interview, and are selected for their career. They show up, learn a skill, work hard, and earn a paycheck. I'd like to reference you to the document submitted about Darren Thornburg. He's this program's recipe for success. Darren loves his job. Darren had previous job as a single site contract, but is now employed directly at Noabel, a great small business employer in Mankato, Minnesota, where he had a chance to be included on their team. Darren is proud of his employment at the restaurant, and he speaks with others who have disabilities about being employed and the support available to him. Alex Swindle is the owner of Noabel, and she relies on the MRCI staff, Becky Burnham is her name, as a resource, just as Darren does. The three of them work through internal and external staffing challenges, as well as opportunities, community dynamics, but overall, they are a team to help Darren maintain his employment. They are each other's resources. Overall, MRCI is proud to support the accomplishments of our clients and share their success stories. We realize that these successes are possible because we have a mission-focused staff. MRCI's labor costs continue to increase, and we need to be able to attract and retain staff who have worked with our clients, their guardians, and their employers to keep this winning recipe cooking in Minnesota. We are here today to collectively ask the committee to support House File 1501. Thank you.
President Brown. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
For the committee's record, my name is John Sherman. I will depart from my written testimony, which is in your packet, to emphasize some key points, I think, about this legislation and a little bit about the extended employment program. I have been involved through 2017 for almost 30 years in the extended employment program in one shape or another as an evaluator, assessor, monitor, program staff, and I retired as the executive director of the state director of the program in 2017. So I suspect I can speak about this program from the experience of the impact in state government that it has. It's unique. Mr. Gordon is an example over and over that over the years that I saw of individuals working in the community, providing value to their families, to themselves, to their employers, to the community they lived in, and they would not have been able to do that without this program. It has a problem, and this bill, I believe, begins to take a look at solving that problem. The problem is, for the program to be effective, to maintain stability, it needs stable funding. One of the individuals, testifiers, spoke to the cost of their staff. It works program works because across the state there are support professionals providing the supports that keep individuals in jobs, keep them out of the revolving door of losing a job, having to go back through the difficult problem if you're a person with a disability of re-engaging in employment and maintaining that employment and often growing in that employment. It's unique in the country. Frankly, I believe it's still unique in Minnesota, but it needs stable funding. The community rehab programs need to know that they have purchasing power at least equivalent to what they've had in the past. So I'm here to speak strongly about to support provisions 8A, sections 8A and 8B, modifying 268A.15 to put into permanent law requirements to propose to the legislature what the effects of inflation are on the program. And hopefully it will begin to develop at least the awareness of the consistency of funding needed to maintain a gem of a program that is frankly not, in my opinion, hidden in state government because it works so well. And with that, I will submit to questions if the committee desires.
Representative Brand.
That's all I have for testifiers. I'm happy to take any questions as well.
Discussions. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the folks to come in today. This is really helpful. I've got a lot of experience with the Extension Employment Program in my community. I'm kind of that, I think it was Alexa in the restaurant that was an owner and had a number of people working for me, and they were some of the best employees ever, the most loyal, thoughtful, detailed. They were really, really good employees, and I really enjoyed working with them, and I really do support the bill, Representative Brand. The part that gives, I guess, part of this heartburn is the inflation factor that we haven't seen before. I get it, and we're seeing inflation today do things we haven't seen for a long time either. And I think part of the concern I have is putting these things into our future legislators that are going to be sitting at these chairs puts them at a little bit of a disadvantage. It could also detract the directors of MMB and others, the deed commissioners, to what is the right amount to do, because we may not either have the money, inflation might be much higher than what it currently is, and if we take our eye off the ball on this thing, on this issue, and we don't address this each year because we've got that inflation factor baked into it, I'm worried we're going to hurt people too. So I guess to the author of the bill, your thoughts to that, because we are charged to do a two-year budget, and anything beyond that is putting others at a different place. So can you just maybe help me? Again, I understand it, but there's some complications to that. So I appreciate your thoughts on that, Representative Brand.
Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, thank you very much for sharing your concerns with this. You know, initially I had a little bit of pause. Of course, I had other legislation in my past that I've worked on, tax-related, that had inflators and things like that, but we've never really gotten there as a legislature. What I would say is that in the bill, and if you look at line 1.10 and 1.11, it says if there is sufficient funding appropriate. And so this doesn't really handcuff a future legislature from going through the difficult decision-making of funding and that sort of thing. But really what it does, I think, is it recognizes this is a decades-old program that's been supported by Republicans and Democrats in this legislature. And this really is a vital piece to our puzzle when we talk about workforce in Minnesota and also opportunity making for folks in our communities. Essentially, this is just one of those opportunities where this builds stronger communities, and I think if there's ever a poster child for this type of a conversation, it's with this bill.
Representative Baker.
And I think to that, Representative Brand, you're probably right. For this program, it's not this massive, large program that kind of crushes budgets, but it does start that slippery slope that we hear a lot of around here. So, I want to support the bill. I would like to have more conversations offline about how that language is worded. It's a little squishy to me about if there's money available, and there's when you give agencies the ifs and the roundabouts, that information, they read it differently than you and I do today. when it comes down to it. So I just may want to visit with you offline as this moves ahead. I support this program. Moore is a great organization that I've worked with before. Mm-hmm. It helps a lot of people. I'm just nervous about that part of any time government puts things into autopilot for a bit, it's not always the best thing to do. So let's continue to work on it, and thank you for bringing the bill forward. And again, I want to shout out to Mr. Good Gordon. Congratulations on your sobriety, my friend. It's a work in progress, I know, and you look great. You're doing great. Thank you very much for being here today. So congratulations to that, too. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and Representative Brand. Hello, Tammy. I have many years of working with adults with disabilities, and I was on the MC RI board for a number of years, so nice to see you today. So my question for you today, I have a question about the funding. So the funding that you're requesting, will this be that the rate is A, and then the rate's going to be moving up to B, or is it that each agency will need to apply to get that rate increase?
Representative Brand.
I will defer to the person with the most experience.
As I read the bill, it would be the former. The extended employment program has a uniform rate that is paid to the provider. And when dollars were available and appropriate for the needs of the program, the rate is adjusted across the board for each provider on the hour of work that is reported. It is a pay for performance, and essentially what we do in the system is increase the pay for that particular performance. I'd be tempted to wander through the long history of this adjusting the rates in this system, but about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the community rehab providers agreed that the only fair way to operate the system was to essentially say everybody gets paid the same, because the differences between operating a program in a rural area versus an urban area and across the state varied so much in terms of the cost of the program that there was no equitable way that could be devised and workable way. I'm a state employee. We wanted to make the, when we were doing this, wanted to make it work. Representative Zhang, Representative Harder, does that answer your question?
Representative Harder.
Yes, thank you.
Any further discussion? Closing comments.
Well, thank you very much, committee, for hearing the bill today. I really do believe in this opportunity. I will close by saying, I had an uncle who was actually the beneficiary of this program. He had Down syndrome, and in his life he also gained employment because of this in the Wilmer area. And so I do really appreciate all the folks that have supported this in the past. I do appreciate the fact that we have an opportunity to support folks in the future. And with that, I'll just close by saying thank you very much for hearing the bill today.
Vice Chair Brand renews his motion that House File 1501 as amended be referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed. Okay, next bill on the agenda is House File 1986. Representative Jordan. I will move that House File 1986 be later worked for possible inclusion. Representative Jordan, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and good morning, members and staff of the committee. I'm excited to present House File 1986 this morning, which is a funding request for Emerge, which is an organization that works to connect people with job skills to bridge employment gaps in our state. They serve the entire Twin Cities region, but have direct benefits in my district of Northeast Minneapolis and Southeast Como, the Cedar Riverside neighborhood, and North Minneapolis. Emerge previously received a direct appropriation of $500,000 in fiscal years 21 through 23 to support work at the Cedar Riverside Opportunity Center in Representative Norris District. And in your handout, you will see that they have fully met or exceeded their goals on the current grant. This session, they are asking for an additional support and a new appropriation of $1 million, which would be $500,000 for each of the next 2 years to continue the work in Cedar Riverside but also provide staffing and program support at their center in North Minneapolis and help train formerly incarcerated adults at their Second Chance Recycling Center in my district. I've seen their work in action at the Second Chance Recycling Center, and I know they would welcome every member of this committee just as much as they've welcomed me. When you go, you can see the recycling work that is being done, you can see the mattresses that are being broken down, and you can talk to the workers themselves about what Emerge and what their job at Second Chance Recycling means to them. And while I could talk about Emerge all day, Mr. Chair, I think members would probably prefer to hear from Emerge directly about the great work they do putting Minnesotans to work.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tara Mayfield. I'm the Senior Vice President of Programs at Emerge Community Development in Minneapolis. And I'm pleased to be here to provide testimony on House File 1986. First, I'd like to give a little background on Emerge. So Emerge programs are based in Cedar Riverside Opportunity Center in South Minneapolis, Emerge Career and Technology Center in North Minneapolis, and Second Chance Reentry Services in Northeast Minneapolis. Across these locations, we offer services to adults and young people. We help with workforce development coaching, financial counseling and education, certificate training in several career paths, and special services for individuals returning from incarceration. And we operate two social enterprises as a model for training, supporting, and employing returned citizens as they reestablish their lives and work histories. Last year, we served more than 2,000 individuals with a staff that is highly reflective of the communities that we serve. Across our staff, we speak 5 different languages, and many of us share the lived experience of the participants that we serve. Previously, we received direct appropriations specifically for the Cedar Riverside Opportunity Center, and we use those funds to re-engage the residents with our centers as a catalyst for new opportunities. So far, we have surpassed our goals for the project in assisting people gain new skills, become employed, and retain those jobs at an increased wage. The handout you have gives a little more detail on those results, but it is important to note that all these results are documented in Workforce One, the state's database system, and our reporting is frequently reviewed and audited by each of our funders. Emerge is seeking a legislative appropriation in the amount of $500,000 for each of the next 2 years to directly support the work we do across all of these locations. This funding will enable us to serve an additional 400 new participants over the next 2 years with the range of trainings, placements, and supports across all the locations. Stay here with me is Larcel Mack, and Larcel really embodies the work that we do at Emerge. He's been with the organization for over 10 years, and he started out as a participant, but now is a leader at Emerge.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Larcel Mack. I am the Reentry Program Manager at Emerge Community Development, and I myself am a proud product of this program. I was incarcerated from the age of 18 until I was 35. Upon release, I was supported by a past generation of Emerge staff who helped me with the resources I needed to rebuild my life with a sense of hope and purpose. Upon release, I was filled with emotions like fear, worry, apprehension. Basically, was I going to be able to successfully transition back into society, or would I be one of the 2/3 that returned to incarceration within 3 years? The program took me through a process of change, and I'll forever be grateful. Step by step, I developed my career skills from a recycling trainee to a series of jobs, financial coaching, career training, which ultimately led me to a professional position where I'm able to give back to people who have gone through similar experiences like myself. If I wouldn't have had this program and those individuals at Emerge who guided me, I can honestly say I wouldn't be here in front of you today, over a decade later. One of the things I am most proud of is that I have played a role in making the program stronger today with deeper support and stronger outcomes for the men and women we serve. decrease in recidivism rates, and improve in employment options, our program has become a go-to. The work we are currently doing is being recognized on a national level for its success with helping more returning citizens achieve their life and career goals. But we can't do it alone. We would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative, any more testifiers?
No, Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Jordan. Good bill. We're gonna try and double their output by doubling their funds. Hopefully the organization will be able to even exceed that goal as well, because we need every single one of them to be successful. The story, you know, that we heard from Mr. Mack today is exciting to hear that. I think that knowing that there are a lot of places out here when you are done with your incarceration, when it's time to get back to the real world here, we need you. We need you to be successful. We need you to thrive and always feel that there's hope around the corner no matter what. So, again, I've heard a lot of good things about this. You've got a good operating board. It looks like a good website. We kind of do that work behind the scenes, and this is a good operation. And again, there's a number of members that spent time yesterday talking about this organization in our huddle. We want to come see it because we really believe that we would learn a lot coming down to Riverside in that area to just see what's happening with all three of these projects. And we invite you to invite us out there. So that's kind of like we're coming. So we'd love to have that. We want to learn and see what you're doing. We want to see Mr. Mack in action down there to see what he's doing to newly released folks. And how do you transition people? That is where we learn the most. Again, it's a good bill, and it's something that we can support. And it's again, it's focused. It's in a 2-year window. Let's do a bunch of good work again. So thanks, Representative Jordan, for bringing it to us. Thanks,
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill. I know emerged from the time that I spent working in Hennepin County as a public defender with some of my former clients, going through and doing really well. Mr. Mack, glad to see you here. Thank you for the work you're doing. And Ms. Mayfield, thank you for your leadership in this organization. I was in Lionel Lakes a couple of weekends ago talking to some individuals and saying that we just want you to know that we haven't forgot about you, and that when you get back and you return home, we're going to prepare a pathway to make sure you can be successful. I think oftentimes we forget that the policies we put in place years ago, decades ago, create our over-incarcerated system that we have here. And it's about time that we start to over-invest in programs to ensure that when folks return home, they can be successful. Programs like this can make that happen. So thank you.
Closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I do encourage you to come to my district and see this in action. I would also love to show you some pictures that I took. We didn't even talk about some of the recycling benefits that Emerge does in making sure that we're diverting waste from our waste stream, too, and giving products a second chance as well. So please come on down. You can see piles of recycling materials that are as big as this room. And they have some – not only do they have a really cool mission and a really – and they give back to the community and put people to work, but they do a lot of other great work in our community. And I've even talked to neighbors who live next to their recycling plant, and they have really great things to say about Emerge. And I don't know that you often hear people say nice things about warehouses in their districts, but people in the Como neighborhood do say nice things about Emerge. So it's a win-win. I hope you'll support this funding.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I will renew my motion that House Bill 1986 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill is House Bill 991. Representative Perrin. I'll move the House Bill 991 be laid over possible inclusion. Representative Perrin, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. This morning I'm here as the really short bill before you. I'm just here to advocate for my community and for the White Bear Center for Arts. It's a nonprofit that was formed in 1968. White Bear, and did we have an amendment with this?
Yeah, it's like you do have an A23-026 amendment. I'll move that the adoption of the A23. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Chair. So Whitebear Center for the Arts offers a broad range of art classes, programs for children, adults, and families. Annually, through art programs and educational opportunities, gallery exhibitions, outreach programs, and events, the Whitebear Center for the Arts serves 6,500 children and youth and 10,000 adults and seniors. They are committed to providing affordable, high-quality arts programming to all who wish to participate. Whitebear Center for the Arts works with artists of all ages and abilities, as well as with other nonprofit organizations throughout Minnesota. As a service organization, the Art Center has identified this need for professional development and professional development within the nonprofit art section, and it fills gaps as talented young people look to take their next steps in the arts field while facing serious economic barriers. They're asking for $600,000 per year for the next biennium as a one-time appropriation to help pay for an paid internship program for high school students. This is the first time the Whitebear Center for Arts is asking for an appropriation from the legislature. And through this appropriation, interns would learn professional development skills and learn through the lens of an art center that can be transferred directly into the workforce or post-secondary educational opportunities. And with that, I'll turn it over to testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Zhang, and good morning to all the House members here today. Thank you, Representative Curran. My name is Alex Ligaris. I'm the Development and Communications Director at Whitebear Center for the Arts, and we want to provide an equitable path for youth, particularly from low-income and underrepresented communities, to have a career in Minnesota's thriving nonprofit sector. Whitebear Center for the Arts is all about creating community through art. Our reach is from Minneapolis and St. Paul through the suburban and rural cities outlying the greater Northeast metro region. We employ a staff of 22 and engage more than 500 artists per year. We have an incredible facility that includes 5 flexible classrooms, 3 gallery spaces, a clay center, an artist resource library, and a beautiful outdoor campus. Annually, we serve more than 20,000 people through a variety of classes, events, and outreach programs. And that includes more than 6,500 youth per year, as mentioned. And one of those people, Lexi Munson, my colleague, will be here to testify. And I'll also draw your attention. We've got 2 other testifiers, students who can't be here today, in great need of a program exactly like this, Ariana and Wanzer. So I'll just draw your attention to their testimony, too. It's included in your packet. Our workforce development program translates these experiences into a career in nonprofits. According to Deed, there are 370,000 nonprofit jobs in Minnesota, the land of 10,000 nonprofits, right? And yet unpaid internships and low-paying entry jobs prevent youth from pursuing a career in this field. A 2015 study by Americans for the Arts about Whitebear Center for the Arts detailed our economic impact, which we understand very well. And in 2023, we will support the equivalent of more than 90 full-time jobs in our community and return $2.6 million into our local economy. So we are asking for 2 years of public support, $600,000 per year, to pilot an internship program. Public dollars will provide for fair pay and a safe environment. It'll provide free equipment for youth to develop skills in a variety of areas, from classes and events to communications, fundraising, membership, our galleries, community outreach, and our retail store. This internship opportunity is about providing youth a holistic foundation, a foundation that accounts for their needs for transportation and housing and mental health. Our Art Center is an independent nonprofit that receives no local government funding. About 50% of our revenue comes from earned and contributed sources, an equal balance, and we conduct an independent audit every single year of our finances, which is available to the public. We hope that this pilot becomes a model for more nonprofits to encourage youth to participate in this verdant sector. And before I welcome any questions, I'll invite Lexi to come and share her testimony too. Thank you so much for your time this morning and your thoughtful consideration.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you today. My name is Lexi Munson, and I started at Whitebear Center for the Arts when I was 11, taking classes in their summer program. By 14, I was regularly volunteering, and at 16, I started working in that same summer program. I became a communications intern during my junior year of college and recently graduated from St. Catherine University with a degree in marketing and accounting and a minor in nonprofit strategies and operations, which was inspired by my love for WBCA. I also recently accepted a position as Membership and Development Coordinator at White Bear Center for the Arts. Being at WBCA during my high school years specifically set me ahead in terms of self-confidence in the workplace because of the sense of responsibility and trust that they instilled in me. It has always been a safe place to explore and take risks because of the support that I felt and continue to feel. My experience also guided my college search because I was able to see every aspect of an arts organization, from programs and maintenance to any administrative duty in between. WBCA also empowered me as an artist from a young age, inspiring me to begin my ceramics business at 16. To this day, I continue to sell my work while improving upon skills such as customer relations and time management, while also getting to feel the pride of being an entrepreneur. I have no doubt that this program has the utmost potential to make an impact, and the thought that students would have the opportunity to experience something similar to what I did, but in a structured and funded format, is very exciting to me. It's also important to remember that my journey all stemmed from that first art class that I fell in love with when I was 11. I wouldn't be where I am today, and I certainly wouldn't be who I am today without White Bear Center for the Arts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing your story. Any further testifiers, Representative Curran?
No.
Discussion. Representative Weems.
Oh, thank you, Chair Zhang. Representative Curran, Mr. Lagaros, and Lexi. Thank you for this, and thank you, Lori, for coming and visiting me and answering many of my questions. I think arts are a very important part of our culture, and what White Bear Lake has done with the visual arts program is amazing. One of the things is I talk to folks in my community is they want to know, how many people do you intend to serve with this, in the sense of how many students per year? And we would like to kind of maybe hear a story back on that or two once the program is done.
Representative Curran?
Yeah, I'll leave that to my testifier to answer.
Testifier.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and Representative Weens. I'm so glad that we get to share a little bit more information about the program this way. And, of course, we have an interest in those stories and making them part of the Heart of the Art Center as it beats on for decades to come. We're going to serve 5 interns year-round for the programs. They're the ones very directly served by this internship. However, they'll each have a one-to-one artist mentor that'll be involved in their journey and a program coordinator that will be responsible for stewarding this program through its piloting process. We also have some programs that they'll be directly involved with that are in part funded by the appropriation. We've got a high school literary magazine called Repose, which builds off of more than 3 decades of high school contests. It's a wonderful print publication that they can take with them into college or future careers, but a showcase of both literary and visual arts. We'll also have a high school fashion expo, which kind of looks at expectations around body image and a lot of these same issues, but in a different art context. We're going to have a high school arts conference as well that these students will be involved in organizing and learning from that experience, as well as an artist career network and directory, which will be a great resource not just for the interns but for our community of thousands of artists. And we're also asking that the funding be used for equipping a workforce training classroom so that these students, while they're there have the equipment that they'll be using for the rest of their careers, things like computers, large format printer, 3D printer, make sure that they have what they need to benefit from the program. And we'll be submitting a budget as well for very, very quickly, so you'll have this all in writing and can see all the numbers. We're only including about a 5% rate for administering the program too. So.
Representative Weems.
Yes, thanks, Chair Zhang, and thanks for that answer, Mr. Lagaros. I'm encouraged that you have a plan, and I know when we do the math and we take a look, 5 interns and it's, you know, per year, that seems kind of expensive, but I imagine the initial cost in setting this program are going to pay dividends to the community. And the core of what you're doing there, I think, can be inspirational. It can be a model for, I think, other communities around the metro and around the state. So I'm encouraged by this, and hopefully we can maybe take a field trip out there as we're taking a look at some other folks. So thank you very much, Rep. Curran and Chair Zhang. Thanks.
Representative Senator Miro.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Curran, for bringing this bill. And thank you, Mr. Lagaros, for your testimony. You know, I agree that there is a thriving nonprofit sector in Minnesota. I think 13% of our employment comes from nonprofits. And a lot of young people that I work with don't, you know about that as a possible career option. I think one of the major myths that I've had to talk about with kids when I've said, you know, a nonprofit could be a job. They're like, I don't want to work for free, right? Because they hear nonprofit and they think like you don't get paid, which is not true. So I like that aspect of it. I'm wondering if you can talk just a little bit more to the demographics of young people in your program and kind of what information do you collect, and is this program going to be targeted towards a certain demographic of young people from your region or your city? If you could speak a little bit more to that, thank you.
Mr. LaGarros.
Thank you, Representative DeMiro, Chair Zhang. We work with our district and have a long-standing relationship through our art and elementary program. We provide all K through 5 students the only visual arts lessons that they get, actually, during their time. So we've watched as our district has become much more diverse and inclusive. We have a constituency that's about 70% white, and it continues to be a driving force in the demographic changes of our community. But we also work with more than a dozen high schools throughout our region and understand that there's the recognition and opportunities for the arts, especially within the arts field, is very, very narrow and oftentimes starts with that unpaid internship. So what this pilot program allows us to do is extend every accommodation we can to make sure that anyone can apply and benefit from this, being sure that they have the transportation, the housing assistance is needed, so be sure that it's not just people from our own White Bear Lake area that can participate. This would be open to the state and to an earlier point, hopefully be a model for many other organizations to follow. So that's who we intend to benefit from this program.
Representative DeMiro. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Curran. I like the program a lot. I just had a question, and it sounds to me that we'll be getting more detailed budgeting as this goes forth, because my question was just the 600. It sounded like it would be 5 internships, so I just wanted to see, you know, what your thoughts were on what we would be paying the intern, you know, how long the length of the internship is, you know, the details of that, and then the breakdown. But it sounds like you have a plan to be giving that to the committee soon, which we'll look forward to it, because it's interesting to see the detail and then the outcome results to see what's possibly we could replicate in ways to help the entire state. So I thank you for that, and that was really my question, so thanks.
Mr. LaGarros?
Yes, thank you. We'll be providing that with all the details. It's easier to see for me in a spreadsheet, but hopefully sounds like I've covered what you need to know today.
Representative Curran, if you could follow up with members who have questions about that. Representative Jamie Bickerfin.
Thank you, Chair, and just wanted to sort of highlight how important it is that we have paid internship programs. I think internships are often a thing we think like, oh, great, there's an internship, but many, many young people, many people can't benefit from those programs if they're not paid. Most of us can't afford to work for free. So I want to lift up framing it that way and how important that is. And then also just to say, you know, I think for a lot of young people, the arts may be the only thing they feel confident about or they feel like they can engage with other people through. I think especially what I've seen with my employees is that often the arts is sort of, especially for the queer community and for students of color, that may be the way that they connect with people. And so I really like leaning into that in that way. And then I had one question, and maybe one of you can answer this, and just a piece of advice to Lexi. I just want to know the name of the ceramics business.
Thank you for your question. My business is called LM Pottery, for my initials, Lexi Munson.
Representative Hemmings-Jaeger.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you so much for bringing this up. I think this is a really cool and creative idea. When you're expanding programming, you're expanding opportunities. And I just think about like all of the kids and that are in high schools, and they're looking for that outlet and they're looking for things to cultivate their passion. And when you open up things like the arts, I mean, that opens up to a whole bunch of opportunities for kids, and it keeps them out of trouble. I will say that Minnesota also has a thriving arts scene. So not only the nonprofit sector that Representative Santamira highlighted, but we do have a thriving arts scene. We're well known for all of our theaters. And when you're cultivating these passions in the arts, you know, I noticed that you said you focused on like production aspects, the creative element too, but there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff like construction and lighting and sound. And so, and I also know in the East Metro, we have a thriving theater community too. In addition to White Bear, we have Ashland, we have East Ridge High School. And I swear East Ridge High School has probably a better theater than some towns I've seen. So it's definitely a big thing up in the East Metro. So, and again, that leads to jobs. So I just want to thank you for kind of bringing a creative, novel idea to the committee. Thanks.
Well, I also just want to thank Mr. Lagueros for being here today. I've had the opportunity to visit your art center, I think it was 2 years ago, with Singh, Mr. Lee, and just having the opportunity to visit the facility and hear from people you're working with was very touching. And so I encourage members who have not had the opportunity to visit the White Bear Lake Art Center to go visit. And so thank you for bringing this bill forward. Representative Kern, final remarks?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee, again, for hearing this bill. You know, this White Bear Center for the Arts is, of course, really integral to my community, but as you've heard, it's also very important for making sure that students across Minnesota have access to really good arts programs. And, of course, by making sure that we can provide paid internships, we're giving the opportunity, like one of the testifiers testified to start businesses young and early and be successful and really encourage small business right from our own communities. So I just thank you again. Thank you for the testifiers, and I appreciate the support.
I'll renew my motion that House Bill 991 be later with possible inclusion. Next is Representative Ryer's House Bill 420. And Representative Ryer will move that House Bill 420 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. First of all, I just want to mention that with House File 420, we do have a handout. It may be in your packet for House File 563. It's for both, but I just wanted to make sure you had access to it. So, first up, House File 420. It raises the amount designated for the statewide Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership by $30 from each dissolution filing fee and $30 from each marriage license filing fee without premarital education by diverting a portion of the fee revenue from the general fund. There's no increase to the overall filing fee paid by applicants. This will provide an ongoing estimated $1.1 million per year to the MFRP. Before you hear about the program, imagine yourself as a person who for years, maybe decades, has been caring for your family at home, dependent on another person's income. Then picture how you'd feel when that income is suddenly taken away through death, disability, divorce, or other personal loss. Maybe you've never worked outside the home and suddenly your whole life has changed. This is traumatic, terrifying. For 40 plus years, the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership, which is federally known as the Displaced Homemaker Program, has stepped in to help. It's been a trusted pre-employment and family stabilization program provided by a network of six regional partners across the state. It's the only program in the state specifically designed to help displaced homemakers address the unique barriers they face while trying to enter or re-enter the workforce under these stressful conditions. What makes MFRP more than a workforce development program is its holistic and client-driven approach. Participants are served through a combination of activities including one-to-one self-sufficiency counseling, weekly workshop series that focus on life skills, needs assessment, and the creation of individualized action plans. The program also helps participants identify and access resources that will make it possible for them to begin their journey towards self-sufficiency. We have underinvested in this program. As you can see from your handout, the cost per participant for MFRP is $1,498 for 12 months of service. Other DEED programs are funded at $3,500 to $5,000 per participant. we want to build on programs that work, and this is a great opportunity to do just that. Now I'd like to turn it over to my testifier to talk more about the program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Jean Keenan. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I am a provider in the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership Program serving South Central Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity, and I would also like to thank Representative Ryer for her support of our work and for authoring this bill. As you heard, our program is the only program in Minnesota designated to meet the unique needs of individuals who are trying to enter the workforce after experiencing abandonment, divorce, disability, or death of a partner. It is our goal to interrupt the downward spiral often faced after the loss of a family's primary wage earner. This wraparound program is offered at no cost to participants, all of whom are at or below 200% of the federal poverty guideline. We're very proud to say that our program is both inclusive and individualized. Some program participants are leaving same-sex relationships. Many are leaving unsafe relationships. 22% enter the program unhoused. Nearly a third of our participants identify as a race or ethnicity other than white. Each individual works with a provider to develop a unique action plan. We help participants to develop essential transferable skills and effective job search strategies. Additionally, we provide direct support dollars to help participants overcome barriers like minor car repairs or lack of internet access that would impede their job search. Finally, and most importantly, the program helps families to stabilize after a crisis by providing holistic and trauma-informed care. The average length of time in the program is 40 weeks, although participants are eligible for services for up to 12 months or more in some cases. As you can see from the bill, funding for the program is authorized by statute and administered through deed from a small amount of fees collected from marriage license and divorce filings. This structure was specifically designed for this program alone. The amount collected from these fees was the program's sole funding source from 1982 to 1992. There was a brief period during which the program was also funded through workforce development and general fund dollars. However, in 2003, it was recommended we return to the use of these fees as our sole funding source. This continues to the present. The amount collected and allocated to the program has not been increased at any time in our long history. As you can imagine, the cost of providing services in 2023 and beyond is very different from how it looked in the early 2000s. It is projected that the requested update to the statute would bring our funding in line with the lowest end of that range of $3,000 to $5,000 for services, but it makes current services continue to be feasible at a time when they are desperately needed. The services we provide are critical because those accessing our program are often Minnesota's unseen unemployed or underemployed who may not otherwise receive any services. Thank you for supporting House File 420.
Thank you. Discussions? Closing remarks? Representative Samira.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I apologize if this was covered and I just missed it. But so as I'm understanding it, we will be increasing the amount of the fee that will go towards the program, but we're not increasing the fee for the participant. So currently, where is the funding going that we will kind of be diverting to this program? Thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. The funding is currently going to the general fund, so it'll be a switch from there.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Jung and Representative Ryer. If I'm understanding, so this most is based off of marriage fees, I think, which statewide is $115, or part of the funding is anyway. And if there is a reduced rate for those that have gone through at least 12 hours of premarital counseling, and then it's $40. So would really nothing change on that side of it? Because already it's a reduced rate. So,
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Yes, that's accurate. And the portion that is diverted is only from the fees for marriage license if they don't have the premarital counseling.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Any more discussion? Closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I think this is a great program. It is one that brings flexibility. It's person-centered. It allows communities to tailor to their own needs, and I am appreciative of your support. Thank you.
Representative Ryan renews her motion to House Power 420B. We refer to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Bill's on its way. Next bill is another Ryan bill, House Power 563. I will move that House File 563 be laid over possible inclusion. Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I won't need to say a lot about what this program is because you've heard a great deal about it. What I would like to say is that this is a one-time appropriation for $250,000 for each of fiscal year 24 and 25. It is really a bridge to help the program get where it needs to be funding wise, and we expect, and we've been challenged in past years to be able to rely on the fees, which we've addressed, and this just helps get us there, and I hope for your support. Next we're going to have a video testifier here, and I'd like to just ask Ms. Keenan to introduce her. Thank you.
Ms. Keenan, please identify yourself for the record again and proceed.
Jean Keenan, thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. So I would like you to know that last year, those who exited the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership Program as employed did so at an average wage of $17.16 per hour. Naturally, we're very proud of the strong outcomes we help our program participants to achieve. However, we recognize that the movement towards self-sufficiency often requires a trusting relationship with a provider who offers encouragement and dignity as well as a helping hand. Through the family stabilization and support services we provide, lives are changed. An investment in our program is an investment in some of Minnesota's most disenfranchised and barriered families. Due to owning her family's only vehicle and living in northern rural Minnesota, it would have been nearly impossible for our past program participant, Stacy Gordon, to participate in person today. But we thought it was very important for you to hear her story. We are grateful for the creative suggestion to have her record a video for you, and we'd like to play that now. Thank you.
Greetings, Chair, members. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Stacy Gordon. I had been in an unsafe relationship and knew for the safety of myself and my children I had to leave. I moved to Brainerd, not knowing anyone except for a few family members in the area. I didn't really have any support and I felt lost. I was now a single mother of four young children, and I was desperate to be able to provide for my family and create stability in their lives. I found out about the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership Program and enrolled. From the first moment that I met with the director, I was showered with love, hope, and support, something that had been lacking in my life. I was provided a supportive environment for me to pursue my education and career goals. I attended and benefited from the various workshops and support groups, the different activities and things we learned and discussed, such as grief support, self-esteem, goal setting, resume writing, job interviewing skills, communication skills, all were very helpful to me. The computer lab was extremely beneficial, as it was a quiet space that I could go to work on homework and for job search, as I didn't have a computer at home, and having four kids at home made it very difficult for me to get anything done. Because I lacked confidence and support, I felt like I did not belong in college. This program helped me to assimilate into the world of academia at Central Lakes College. One of the biggest goals in that program, in the program that has helped me,
Ms. Keenan.
So I do have In the case of technical difficulties, I do have Ms. Gordon's permission to share the remainder of her story. So one of the major goals that Ms. Gordon had to be able to get a car. And the program was very instrumental in helping her apply for a grant for a donated car from another organization. She was happy to be chosen as the recipient of a very nice car, which was and still is in excellent condition. She couldn't be more grateful for what she has received. She states, "I can now happily say that I'm a college graduate. I am gainfully employed in a career that I love, where I can help and support others to reach their goals as well. I am so grateful for the services that this program has provided and for all the support I was given. The Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership has helped me in so many ways. It has changed the course of my family forever."
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have no other testifiers.
Prayer discussion. Discussion. Representative Zaleski.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer. Just wanted to thank you. I think it's reaching a lot of people and has done some great things, and look forward to it. So thank you for bringing this bill.
Any more discussion? Representative Sesamiro.
Thank you. I just want to echo and say thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill. And I didn't know about this program, and I'm glad to know about it. And, you know, I think there's a question that's asked a lot about people who are in abusive relationships of why don't they just leave. And there's lots of reasons why people, you know, are stuck in those situations. But we know that one of them is economic. And so the fact that our state has this, the fact that our state has this kind of safety net makes a lot of sense to me, and it makes sense that it's something that we should be investing in. So thank you.
Closing remarks, Representative Ryer.
Thank you for your support for this program. It's an excellent program, and I would love to see it move forward.
I will renew my motion that House File 563 be later with possible inclusion. Okay, folks, so members, next week we're going to have our regular 8:30 a.m. hearing, followed by an evening hearing, and then possibly a Friday hearing. Look out for an email from our staff about it. That said, Representative
Just to confirm, there's no Friday hearing this week.
No. Unless you want to join the Economic Development Committee hearing at 8:30. That said, we are adjourned.
Mr. Chair, so next Friday it would be a morning, like 8:30, or what?
It will likely be an afternoon. Depends on how many bills we can get through, because we want to make sure that we hear all of the bills that are in our procession. And so likely an afternoon, but we're still confirming time with leadership yet. So we'll let you all know. I'll let Lee Baker know too, so y'all are all informed, because it is deadline. I want to make sure that we hear bills from both sides of the aisle.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, we're adjourned.